Do you stim when you worship? Tick when you pray? Info dump theology, or think you might be gay? The autistic mystic, we're talking about stuff you probably like.
Welcome to the Autistic Mystic. My name is Jeff. I am the Autistic Mystic. Apologies on the front end for the delay in getting new episodes out. I put out an update the other day about my computer troubles, but I will be posting two episodes a week for the next few weeks to catch up. Today, I am joined by the unstoppable Tori Jamieson. Tori is a pastor in St. Louis and the founder of Lot's Wife Trans and Queer Chaplaincy, where they minister to the oft-overlooked and extra-marginalized members of the LGBTQ2PIA+ community. Tori is an activist and community organizer, and if there is social activism happening, they are right there in the thick of it, using their voice and privilege to give space and a platform for those marginalized communities. In this conversation, we talk about the progressive clergy movement, tone policing, the meaning behind the name Lot's Wife Queer and Trans Chaplaincy, and how churches can better care and serve trans communities. A quick note, my son woke up twice during this recording. I've edited out the interruptions, but because we were live on TikTok while recording, Tori had some really good conversations with the people watching. I'm including one of those conversations at the end of the episode, so if you want to hear that, keep listening after the outro. Okay, I'm going to stop talking right now so we can get right into it. So sit back, grab your noise-canceling headphones, and strap yourself in for this week's info dump. Here's How to Bear Witness with Tori Jamieson. We became fast friends on TikTok and Facebook. And
it's true.
I feel like we are incredibly bad for each other because we encourage the worst parts of each other.
You help empower my hey, what happens if I post X?
Right. Yeah.
Yes, this is real fun. Let's please post more gay Jesus content. I'll defend you when the trolls yell about it.
Thank you.
Or likewise, less progressive clergy.
Well, because my first exposure to you was someone in the progressive clergy group not realizing you were in the progressive clergy group and posting your video being like, is this going too far about like Jesus being gay with the Apostle John, the beloved disciple? And that was one of those moments for me, like I hadn't ever thought about that. I didn't have a problem with it, but it really made me stop and ask, like, because like I was first confronted with the Jesus Mary Magdalene theories, like when the Da Vinci Code came out when I was in high school, and I was fine with that, and then I'm like, and most Christians I think are fine with that, like it's so long as they were married, of course. You can't have any premarital sexual relations happening, but I'm like, if we're fine with Jesus and Mary Magdalene and we're affirming, we also need to be fine with Jesus and John.
Right.
Like, so there's like some weird, like latent homophobia, even among the affirming Christians, where like, well, being gay is okay as long as it's not Jesus who's gay.
Yeah, and it's so interesting, right? And like, I mean, that wasn't the hill that I meant to die on, right? Like suggesting that Jesus had a queer lover. I mean, I believe it.
Right.
I do, because I think the text supports it. Like it says that Jesus like laid his head in the lap of this person and everyone else, no one else was just canoodling in this way. And like, you know, and I think I'm supported by scholarship, like, you know, a couple of our queer scholars, you know, are published that way. His name slips my mind, but Althaus Reed supports that. And the guy out of University of Chicago, Ted, oh, it's the worst. I'm not gonna remember, Jeff, I apologize.
That's all right.
But I'll send it to you.
All sources must be cited on this.
I know, well, and the thing is, like, that's the thing, like, I'm a chaplain serving, like doing pastoral care 100% of the time. Like, I don't remember all this stuff. Like, right. Sometimes people will be like, oh, tell me about Acts 1797. I'm like, I don't even know. Like, right. I don't know. You've read it probably more recently than I have.
Well, somebody asked me about wisdom, about a proverb the other day. And I was like, honestly, I studied wisdom literature like the least of all of the literature, of all the biblical genres. Proverbs is like my worst one. And I was like, I'll take a look at it, but I don't know what I can tell you because,
yeah, sorry, I interrupted. No, that's cool. Yeah, so like you're in the same boat of like you're doing other things, like quoting. Like, I wish that I had the ability to spend my 60 hours of work a week being like sitting around just reading, but actually there's like a world of hurt that needs, right, that needs care and compassion, yeah, and crisis response, and that's what I'm doing. But so in the meantime, So backing up to the TikTok video. Yeah. So like that, so that Jesus had a queer lover, like, was not the hill I meant to die on, but that's how my TikTok career got started. And yeah. And it was, and it was just a suggestion, right? And it wasn't right. like me being like, your faith is in question if you don't buy this, like, just, it's just presenting right. some literature, like presenting some truth.
And it's presenting a fun thought
and,
experiment.
Yeah, and so like, and, like when that it has was, some truth to it.
Yeah.
But I was really shocked and when collegiality was immediately broken, when like I literally posted on there, I'm like, so I'm in this group. Hello. I've been in this group for like a day,
right.
You know, like, and they did not apologize. And today posted about like just some nonsense about like, well, sometimes queer people need to read like non-affirming literature to know what, and I was like, absolutely not. Absolutely not.
I missed that.
Yeah, I was like, so here's the problem. Like, we've had a problem. Like, I was like, I just want to be really clear that you condemned me before. So like,
right.
So I'm not convinced that you're safe to tell queer people what to do.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
And I just want to be really honest with that. Like, you're not queer. This discussion is about, because the discussion was about like queer clerk, like what would you put on a bookshelf for LGBTQ persons, right?
Right.
So for LGBTQ questions, for like from one of our colleagues who like is a institutional pastor, at least right. for the moment, right?
Yeah.
And so like, you know, it was weird that collegiality, it was broken when I've had so many issues with collegial, like I'm too queer and I'm too much of an activist for all of these traditional spaces. And then here I am right. in the most non-traditional space possible. And like, right.
And you're so still too queer.
Like,
yeah.
I was like, why do we have to attack each other? And like, also like it feels really threatening. And also I think it's really interesting. Cause I know I think it's not a secret that you identify as ace, right?
Yeah.
Like, okay. So I'm not trying to like spill the tea.
You just outed me on the internet. No,
I didn't mean to. Yeah. So I'm just making sure. But
I should tell you after about how my spouse accidentally outed me to my brother like 12 years ago. But go on. Okay.
So yeah. So like, so it's so interesting, right? Because so I don't identify as ace. I identify as a non-binary lesbian. But like, but I recognize that for many of my ace siblings, like you all are so silenced even out of queer spaces. Mm. So it's just so interesting, right?
Yeah.
That like, that people who want to be progressive Christians will jump up and down and be like, Jesus can't be gay, but it's really cool if Jesus is ace, because you're actually not probably cool with ace people in your midst, right?
Right.
Like Jesus can be ace, because we're fine with that, but like, oh, you're really, are you sure though? Like, are you sure? Like, let's just talk about some sex some more, just so you make, you really should, you know, like,
yeah.
Like ace stuff is invalidated so often, but it's cool if it's Jesus.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
Jesus
like,
is the only just, one who's allowed to be ace.
Right,
because,
right.
Because,
but you,
yeah.
I don't know, Jeff, maybe you're confused, you know, like, I mean.
So maybe you just need more hormones.
Right, right. Well, you haven't figured out the right way. Let me tell you my favorite. You know, like it's so.
Let
it's
me
just...
tell you, I have definitely figured out the right way, and I'm good at it. it's just not something I think about a lot or care about. So yeah, yeah, and
it's,
I think
yeah, wild.
Yeah. What was I going to say too? we were just oh, it was gone. I had a really good, interesting. It was going to be so smart, and everyone was going to think, "What a brilliant person you are, Jeff." No,
you are brilliant, Jeff.
Oh, well,
we were talking about We were talking about asexuality and like people not afraid, like Jesus being the only asexual person. That's cool.
Right. And was it about being non-affirming in affirming spaces or collegiality?
I don't know.
In any event, you and I met. Fine. It's gone.
And yeah. I have really appreciated your constant companionship of like, yes, I think this is a cool idea. Speaking of, so I would love to tell folks who don't know like who I am and what I'm up to in the world.
Yeah, please do.
A little bit of context.
Yes, yeah.
So, hello. I'm Pastor Tori Jameson. I'm out of St. Louis, Missouri, and I run a wild little organization called Lot's Wife Trans and Queer Chaplaincy. And so we serve activists, trans people, poly, and kinky folks. And so like we basically don't serve cis, L's, and G's, right? you know, and because the thing is, so I've got a question on my TikTok. There was are there LGBTQ affirming churches in America? That's a fascinating question. And the thing about that is
ask.
the answer,
yeah.
Yeah, the answer to that is on paper, there are, right? There are tons of major denominations in the US are things like United Church of Christ, though not all of them. Evangelical Lutheran churches, increasingly some of the Methodist churches, but there's big caveats with that. You know, there's some affirming Baptist organizations and things like that. So there's a strand of affirming Catholics. Like there are some, but the problem is when you go to a congregational level, lots of places will, not lots, but some places will hold out a rainbow flag and a trans flag and be like, "You're welcome." And then they realize who we are. Right. They're you're trans and your pronouns are fey and fair, or they and them, or z and sir, and they can't handle it. Right. Or you're trans, you're a bearded, you have a, you know, Jeff is a bearded human, but Jeff shows up at church using she, her, you don't use she, her pronouns, but you could if you showed up at church saying your pronouns, your name is Jeff and your pronouns are she and her, and people like lose their ever loving minds. Right. Yeah. Like, how do you have a beard, you can't be a woman. Like, right. Like you just start suddenly, like it pulls out this like, essential, like gender essentialism out of people.
Right.
And it, that makes people inherently unsafe, right? There are, it's even worse for poly folks, right? Where people don't understand like your relationship structure, and it's not like they have to be experts in it. It's all you have to do is just be nice to whoever shows up with you, right? Like, it's fine. You don't
Which
have to.
Which was a big thing. So I'm currently in the process of being having my ordination credentials switched to another organization. And one of the big things for me agreeing to do it with this organization was I was like, look, I serve an entirely queer community. Like, my church is almost entirely queer people, and the people who aren't queer are there because someone they love is queer, right, and they're part of the church. And I was like, and we have polyamorous people in the church, and I'm not going to tell them to stop being polyamorous or that they're being sinful or anything like that. I'm going to encourage the healthy expression of love that they have for each other. And the person was like, "That's great.
Amen.
We have a ceremony for polyamorous couples, a polyamorous affirmation ceremony." And yay. I was like, "You do?" And what it came out of was people who it started with people who are still technically divorced. Can't get the papers through on time in time for the ceremony, and so they have an affirmation of their love, and then but then they were like, but this is applicable to polyamorous people too, because legally you can't marry more than one person together legally, but we can use this
liturgy
is the word I'm looking for, can use this liturgy we've created for this other ceremony to apply to polyamorous people too. And I was like, I love this organization. This is wonderful.
That's awesome.
Fantastic. Yeah.
So yeah. So like lots of places, not lots, but again, like some places will affirm L's and G's. I just left. I didn't rage quit, but I stepped away with some force, yes. From a organization that I had that was going to fiscal sponsor my little church. But also, like, I had been, had been in membership with them. Although I was really clear, I refused to do the ordination process because the ordination process is, can I cuss on this podcast?
Sure.
The ordination process is fucked because it is designed around wealthy white cis men and everyone else conforming to that standard. And, you know, or you're just radically, or if you were going to go around it, you were a token. Right. And you were an awesome, prove how cool of a token you are. Yeah, no, absolutely not. So I was like, abso-fucking-lutely not. I'm not doing it. And they're like, oh, well, okay, but you could just be it. And I was like, no, I'm, fuck you, no. But I do like this particular local congregation in your organization. So I'm cool with them. But what it came down to, I just rage quit over their leadership. Basically, they had a intern from a non-affirming background who was just absolutely refusing to do the education he needed and to work on pronouns. And then right. their senior leader got furious with me and was like, you're just not being patient. Well, because you think I'm the only trans person in the room, but I got news for you. You know, like,
right.
it's just that sort of stuff. So and she ended up saying, like, I end up making a post about, like, I don't need allies because allies are people that you give a cookie to when you don't punch me in the face. Right. And I'm tired of allies. I need accomplices. Like, I need people who are going to yes. use my pronouns in and out, like, whether I'm present or not, right? Whether yeah. And who are going to do this work within themselves and the community to, you know, and assume that trans people are in the room, right?
Yeah.
And whether or not you know it, because y'all ain't safe for people. So, but you got trans people, you just don't know it. And I do, and you don't. And so, you know, like, but take my word, you have other trans people who aren't out yet to you. And she told me that being an accomplice is not pastoral. So she wouldn't do it. And I was like, cool. So then I'm out. And I'm like, but have you read the Gospels?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, that's the whole thing. It's like it's absolute. I mean, we could get into the discussion of how there's no actual pastors in the Bible, and maybe that's what right. they mean. Like, in terms of the station we have created for ourselves in the modern church, yeah, right. maybe not. But like the radical inclusive ministry of Jesus and the radical inclusive ministry of the disciples, absolutely is for accomplices. Like, that's what they were. They put themselves with the most marginalized people in that society and worked with them and
right.
like yeah and like and we're like yes we're still at the table with the Pharisees and the Sadducees and we're reclining with them, but like the whole time Jesus was at that table, he's like lecturing them on how like because the whole thing, like when he's with people, like why he preaches in that way is because like during Second Temple Judaism, like the Sabbath is a little taste of heaven. There's a Jewish writer named A.J. Heschel, who's a rabbi, brilliant guy, and wrote that the Sabbath is equal in holiness to the temple, its architecture in time, which I love the imagery of. But that was the mentality, is like, this is a little taste of heaven, this Sabbath. And so they'd be reclining at the table and they might be talking about that. And like, isn't this wonderful? This is the taste of like, of the Olam Haba, the world to come. And Jesus would be like, well, actually, the kingdom of heaven is like, yada, yada, yada. And like spit off all these very challenging parables that like, oh, like, no, the kingdom of heaven is this like completely upside down, backwards kingdom where if you think you're first, you're doing it wrong, and like it's the
right.
equalizer, yeah, and like right. if you think you're last, you're actually right where you need to be,
right? And it's so it just astounds me when people choose and people that should know better choose empire over yeah. gospel, right?
Yeah.
And
it's it's the idea of unity, I think, that is actually mm-hmm. really poisonous to the church, because it's like, well, we want to have unity, and if people see us infighting, they're going to think we're not unified, and they're not going to want to become Christians. And I'm like, I will not accept unity at the expense of the marginalized. I will always flip tables instead of make peace, if that peace is at the result of that peace is further marginalizing people already on the outside.
Right. And right. I think we messed up when we talk about Jesus the Good Shepherd,
right,
who like gently calls in all of the sheep, when actually like Jesus has an attitude issue a lot of times because people piss Jesus off, and right. like, and Jesus draws, like, when they're going to go stone that lady, like, you know, Jesus draws a freaking line and is like, you know, like, I dare you to cross this boundary. Look, what are you going to do? Right?
Right.
Like, he who is without sin, cast the first stone. Oh, wait a second. This, you know, and so it's just this, Jesus is so much more radical than what Sunday school.
Oh, I know. Well, and like what you're saying about the shepherd thing too, is like, shepherds have a very low standing in first century Palestine, right? Like right. a shepherd could not testify in the Sanhedrin because they were shady as fuck characters that nobody trusted. Like, it was the job you got because you were an ex-con and no one else would hire you, so you watched the sheep, right? Like, right. It, like, they were bad people. So I mean Jesus calling himself the Good Shepherd, like, is hearkening to like the book of Ezekiel and other prophetic works, but also like that's not the job you want, and that's not a right. trustworthy job to have, right. So
it's wild. So I've sort of scorned everywhere and have kind of struck out on my own. And, the reason that we started, in the way that we did was because, I was a part of another organization, cause I've tried it. Right. And right. I went to seminary, graduated, was like, all right, people are going to love me with this radical call to ministry, and everyone's going to be like, yeah, no, absolutely not, right? So anyway, and the more time I spent in community, the more liberal and more activist I got, and the queerer I got, and the harder it became to fit anywhere. But so I was serving an organization here during a set of protests called the Stockley protests. And I got fired for both insisting on the correct pronouns for a couple of our members after our church board director kept intentionally misgendering them. So that's a pattern. And also because I was an activist and
right.
And I was out in the streets, and my pastor kept telling me to sit in the office and do spreadsheets. And I kept my supervisor, and I told him no, because the Holy Spirit calls us to the streets, and that is where I am going. Have you heard the story of Pentecost? Have you read the Gospels? And my mouth got me fired. But it was actually like the right decision, right?
Yeah.
Because it was clear, like, oh, like, this was my choice of actually like tolerance and moderation. Like, that doesn't get us anywhere. That doesn't advance the cause of gospel. Like, that doesn't do the gospel. It doesn't right. cause us to move toward liberation, right?
Right.
It doesn't create liberation in the world if I sit in the office and watch Netflix while pretending to do spreadsheets.
Right.
I don't understand how that's my job as a pastor.
Yeah.
My job is to literally be amongst my community. And so anyway, so we do it. So Lot's Wife basically does a ton of pastoral care. So we do emotional spiritual support for Kingsters, poly folks, trans folks, activists, and we also do like resource. So we do informal casework and crisis work.
Nice. That's amazing. Let me tell you something that was told to me when I could not hold a job down in the church. And it really hit when my friend told me this. So my friend was also a pastor for several years and then just stopped because They were like, I don't see any fruit in this vocation. and what he told me, I had gotten fired from one position and I got immediately hired at another because I ruined my reputation by coming out and being a shit disturber. But at the time I had a very good, at the time I had a very good reputation.
Out of the closet and literally into the streets, kicking over sacred cows.
Absolutely. But I got hired right away because I had a good reputation at the time. That church also didn't go well. And then after I left that church, he was like, you know why though, right? And I'm like, no, what's going on? I'm like I felt called, like I did really well in school. I'm like, I feel like I'm good at this. I don't know why I can't, like, I didn't get fired from the second job, but they just, like, the contract ended and they're like, nah. And so I was like, okay. But he was like, people don't want a prophet as a pastor because prophets call out the things that are wrong and the systemic issues and the ways that we need to repent, and pastors make you feel good and atone for you. And he's like, you have a prophetic voice, and people don't want that in a pastor. He's like, it's an incredibly important job in the church and you need to keep doing it, but you're going to have no luck being a pastor with that. So, like, absolutely. I think that goes for you too. Like, you have an incredibly prophetic voice and you call out injustice unabashedly and unashamedly. And you just, like, when you see something, you speak out against it and you call people to something higher, even though it makes them incredibly uncomfortable. But we need to be able to exist in those uncomfortable places, or the church is just gonna stay the same and it's not great all the time.
It's true.
Yeah.
And I think that the only way to continue, like, in the settings that we're in, like in the cultures that we're in, like, is to really meet people where they're at and serve them exactly as they are. And I have to believe, like, the radical thing that we now call church, that we see in the New Testament, that does mutual aid, that, like, lifts up its own as leaders and, like, and, you know, and calls people, like the unlikeliest folks into leadership and on, like, this radical weird little thing that was so powerful that they're persecuted and eaten by lions for hundreds of years. Like, I can't believe that, like, that thing is at all similar to this, like, need for this call to pastors now to serve these congregations that are, like, to serve the overserved, right? That are, like, to help white moderates be more white and more moderate. Like, I just don't know, you know? Like, like,
there's enough mayonnaise on this sandwich. We can stop.
Right. Like, the mayonnaise is only, like, they're always going to tell you that the mayonnaise is a little bit too spicy, that any sort of dissent that doesn't look like them, you know, is, you know, I just.
Yeah. It's it is. It's really difficult. Can you tell me the impetus behind the name of your organization, Lot's Wife? I don't actually know if I've heard this story. I obviously know the story from the Bible. I don't exactly know how it connects. So
realistically, we needed a really queer name. So the other name that we were thinking about going with was Saint Wegglefortis, who has a really cool story. She's our transgender saint. I'm using she because that's how all the stories are, but who knows what, if this person is a person of history, and likely they're not, right? But, like, Saint Wegglefortis was this, in brief, Saint Wegglefortis was this saint who she basically was, like, engaged to, so she's like a, you know, she's living in a time when there's, like, a German king or something, and she's, like, the daughter of this German king, and you know, and he's married her off to this, like, or he's about to marry off to this, like, terrible other man because she's property, and they needed to, like, need her, you know, room to make a match for land, right, or whatever.
Right.
So anyway, she's not about to have it. And I don't know if she's just not into dudes or like not into that particular dude or what, but whatever the case is, that the text is usually it's a medieval version of the story. So it's very like, oh, she's just so in love with Jesus. Okay, cool. So I don't know. So who knows, right? Maybe she's ace, like, and not into any, you know, not into like not wanting to have any intimate, you know, who knows, right? But whatever the case is, or aromantic or whatever, who knows? But whatever the case, whatever her deal is, she wants nothing to do with this terrible man. And so she's like, I will not marry him. And so there's her father, the king, is like, well, then I'm going to throw you in the dungeon and you'll learn and you'll just decide. So she goes to the dungeon and she like pleads with Jesus and is like, oh, Jesus, you've got to save me from this. I love you and I don't love this man and I don't. And so like pleads and pleads and pleads and pleads. And basically he says, well, like, you know, you'll die in this dungeon if you don't marry him. So anyway, so it gets right up to the day of the wedding and they go to check on her and like the morning of the wedding or whatever, and like to pull her out of the dungeon and force her anyway. Right.
Right.
And she has transformed and has a beard and is hairy. And so it's a rather quick medical transition, but right. Nonetheless. And so, you know, and so and they, you know, of course they have some negative things to say, and the man, you know, the terrible man is like, I'm not marrying a man. And we don't ever hear what Saint Wigglefort, you know, what Wigglefortis thinks about the whole situation, but nonetheless, she is crucified. So there's these beautiful, haunting, horrible, but beautiful images of where, like, in some German churches and some other places, where she's a crucified, where it's like, it's a bearded Christa, right? So there's like a, it's what's like a Jesus kind of imagery. So it's like a person on a cross with large breasts and a beard. And so anyway, so that's sort of celebrating a trans person. Yeah. But again, she's not, who knows if she was right. A person in history, when she's probably not.
Well,
but if she was a person in history, like, who knows how she identifies. But so what we're doing is we're kind of back claiming her. But like, again, I'm using her because it's the only pronouns that were assigned. But who knows, right? I don't know. And maybe there's a whole lot to the story we don't know, because her voice isn't privileged at all in the story, right? Because she's a piece of property.
But. Right.
So anyway, so St. Wigglefortis. So, but it was like, oh gosh, because I'm in very Catholic St. Louis. And so there's saint everything, right?
Right.
Everywhere is saint everything. But I was like, oh, and then I'm gonna have to explain who this is every time and I don't want to deal with it. So I need something that like sounds obscure enough, but also is super queer that isn't that. So we end up choosing Lot's wife, because so basically the story of Lot's wife comes right after Sodom and Gomorrah, right? Sodom and Gomorrah. Mm-hmm. Are, you know, angels come to town to test to see if people are willing to give them shelter. Everybody sucks, right? You know, they all jump and holler about borders. They don't really jump and holler about borders, but they might as well have. And they're like, you know, you all don't belong here. And so no one gives them shelter except Lot and his family. And the town people are upset that they, you know, that these people were faithful to God's command to give people shelter. And the town people come to try to assault them. Mm-hmm. And Lot, because his daughters, Lot is not a good guy, but Lot tries to give his daughters away, because again, they're property and they're less valuable property than these strangers. And that's sort of the, and then, but basically because nobody in Sodom and Gomorrah would give away their, or nobody in, let me say that again. Nobody in Sodom and Gomorrah would follow God's command to give shelter to the stranger. Right. They are destroyed by fireballs, right? So that's that story. And that story, I know, Jeff, you know all that. But like, that story is used against our community all the time.
Yeah.
Like, this is a text against homosexuality. We'll get you, you know, we'll get fireballs rain down on you. Well, like, okay, but like, also there's not a town of entirely gay men. Like, it's just, that's not about what it is. Like the language
if
is around
there is,
assault.
Can I have directions?
Right. Like, it's just like, wait, so like, and for all intents and purposes, for the people who live in these places, because they don't have Google Earth, like they can't look to see how close they are to anything. They're in the middle of a desert. Like, it's really not very far, but for all intents and purposes, like Sodom and Gomorrah are the entire world to these right. folks, right? And they're these two yeah. little towns next to each other. And that's it. That's all that they know. They don't know that there's flourishing civilizations, you know, 50 miles away, and flourishing civilizations in the same time in China, you know, and like right. whatever, right? And like, and you know, and deeper in different parts of Africa and like whatever, right? Like they don't know these things. So like, and so for all intents and purposes, they're their whole world. And so like one town of like one half of your world is not all gay men. Like this, so the, like that right. criticism doesn't like make any sense.
Yeah.
But like nonetheless. So anyway, so that story is used, and again, it's about hospitality and not queerness, but like, but anyway, so they violate hospitality laws and they get destroyed. So, but because the Sodom and Gomorrah story, like, is right after the Sodom and Gomorrah story. So like the fireballs, the way that the text talks about in Genesis, like the fireballs are in the sky, right? And they're like coming over, and Lot and his family and his wife and a couple of other folks are allowed to, like a couple of daughters and stuff, are allowed to leave. And they're sent out into the desert. God promises to provide a particular place for them to go. But again, they might as well be walking off the literal edge of the planet. So like the fireballs are coming down. Like, they're not really walking off the edge of the planet, but for all intents and purposes, that's the way that it feels, right? Yeah. So they're about to walk off that edge. And like a weird thing happens in the text, right? Like, but like to think about like why this matters, like if putting yourself into these shoes, right? You're leaving everyone you've ever loved and you don't know if anyone else ever exists, right? You don't know. Like, and God is calling you, but like God is destroying everything. So like, how do I know that if I walk out too, like now I just have to feel all this grief for leaving everything I've ever left behind, and then God's gonna destroy, you know, like it feels weird. So they're worried and they're, you know, I have to believe that they're feeling like some sort of way about it. And like, they're also people of faith who understand the prophetic traditions, right? So they know that there are stories in their time where like people, you know, where so many times people are sent back to try to, you know, save the folks that, you know, or that God may want to destroy. So Lot's wife comes from this part that basically they're walking out, and Lot's wife, who doesn't have a name in the text, she turns around, right? And is turned into this pillar of salt. And in a desert, right? Salt is incredibly valuable. Salt is something that is like wars in this time are fought for then, and they've been fought for since, right? So she's turned not obliterated, not remembered, but in fact made into this valuable pillar for the way that she behaved toward the people that she was leaving. And so I have to believe she turns around for one of two reasons. She either turns around because she's acting in the prophetic tradition of like, right. I'm going to give it one more go and I don't care what it costs me, right? Because God, like, I love these people and I know God, and they can know God too, right? And they can follow God's call, and let maybe God will give them one more chance. So I think that Lot's wife was either like following in the steps of the prophetic tradition, right? And making one more go to like help her people like follow God, right? And like like and pitch to God and pitch to them like, you know, I'm gonna make one more go, and if it costs me my life, so be it, right? But I'm going to do the like make one more petition to God, right? And so she's turned into salt as a way to mark her piety and faithfulness. Or the more interesting position of actually, I think that she does the only thing that any of us can do when we're grieving, right? And that is that she bears witness. So like when a friend has like a cancer diagnosis, that is like a right. terminal cancer diagnosis, right? Or a like just, you know, something else is spinning out of control, right? There's I can't fix cancer, right? I can't. Right. If I could, I should be doing that and not pastoring, right?
you could
and
get
my
on
tangent on that is like these faith healers, like this is why like faith healing obviously isn't true, because like if you had the answer, like Johns Hopkins would employ you if you could really straighten bones, you know, you'd be so much cheaper. Faith healers would be so much cheaper to have in your hospital than like orthopedics or or orthopedist, right? Anyway, so when like something is out of control, right, there's very little a lot of time that any of us can do other than to be with people and to bear witness, right? And that bearing witness is really powerful. It's not doing nothing. Yeah. It's in fact doing an incredibly important thing. And so she turns around to bear witness to like the fireballs are already coming, right? There's no stopping them at this point, but they don't have to be alone to see them, right? That she on the outside bears witness and remembers, right? And that her death then like is like that what she turns around is to bear witness and to share and to be a beacon of love and justice and mercy, right? To be to bear witness to like this atrocity that is happening to them. And that's perpetrated by God, but none of it is no less an atrocity. And so, she's this pillar of salt because she's an important carrier of memory, right? And so much that salt, like if there is actually this deposit of salt that's within walking distance of these towns, goodness gracious, people are actually going to then use that, right? So whoever survives, which we don't actually know, but you know, who knows, right? It says they're totally wiped out, but you know, I don't know. Anyway, but like what I'm saying is that like if she like her it's not that like her act of caring and like her act of caring and bearing witness ends, because if she's this salt, then that salt is used and that witness is then carried into the bodies of other folks. So it's not so dissimilar from like communion, right? Where we talk about like Jesus's body, right? Like that we remember the body of Jesus, right? And that this bread is somehow like this mystical sustenance to get us through, you know, whatever the next life is, and empower us to do the good work of liberation and justice. So I think it follows, you know, that the mystical thing that our scriptures are, you know, about, like food carries this meaning and you know, substances carry mystical things too. Lot's Wife is about.
We interrupt this podcast for another installment of Mystic Moments. Hey friends, I wanted to take a minute to highlight what Tori did here. There may be some of you who feel uncomfortable with the way Tori interpreted that story, especially if you grew up in the evangelical church or watched the anime Superbook as a kid and have been fed the narrative that Lot's wife was in the wrong or being selfish by looking back. But read that story again. There's no morality attached to Lot's wife's decision to look back. She just did. And so what Tori is doing in interpreting the story this way is actually a very ancient mystical practice. It's done quite a bit in early rabbinic Judaism and even in the New Testament, interpreting the story based on the information that's not there. Now, I know that sounds crazy to our modern ears because we can only know for sure what is actually written in the text, but in some areas of ambiguity, we have the ability to theorize and to guess at what the story isn't telling us. In Jewish tradition, there are volumes of these interpretations called the Midrashim, and even in the Christian New Testament, the author of the book of Hebrews does this in their interpretation of the character Melchizedek from Genesis. The text about Melchizedek in Genesis does not say that he doesn't have parents, or that he was ageless, or that he never died. It just doesn't mention those things. And so the author of Hebrews uses the pre-incarnational Christ-like figure Melchizedek as an allegory to the eternality of Jesus and his priesthood. And many Christians still come up with midrashic ideas. I've heard people talk about Noah's DNA, or that Melchizedek is one of Noah's sons, and granted, those are rooted in some problematic beliefs about the importance of genetics and what constitutes pure blood, and we're not gonna touch that. We're gonna distance ourselves from those, but even our entire mythos about Satan being a fallen angel is based on the Midrashim of Dante and Milton. Now, sometimes those story interpretations can bleed into into mainstream thought and affect our theologies in negative ways, but so long as the interpretation you're reading leads you to be more compassionate and loving and leads you to lift up the marginalized and the downtrodden, you can't miss. That's why there's an old rabbinic saying that says, only a fool believes all the Midrash are true, but only a fool believes none of them are. Okay, back to the show.
That's amazing. I love that. And I'm wondering too, I mean, this is sometimes I get ideas and they're not at all thought out and I shouldn't say them out loud until I think about them more. But the New Testament interprets Sodom and Gomorrah as being a mirror story to the flood narrative. Because in the flood narrative, the angels got busy with the daughters of men. And in the Sodom and Gomorrah narrative, it's the humans who are trying to get busy with the angels. And instead of water falling from the sky, you have fire falling from the sky. But there a remnant of humanity is preserved. And then I'm like, well, and salt is a preservative. Like that's how you keep food from spoiling. That's like essential to survival in the ancient world is utilizing salt. And like you said, like it was so valuable that people would fight over it. So, yeah. So I'm wondering really if there's anything there. I don't know. But
I don't know. I mean, if anything, right? There's that whole creation museum and the ark, you know, the ark encounter. That's yes. So I would love, I Jeff, I wish I could tell you that I had thought about that. And I coming from Ken Ham traditions, and escaping that, have created a ministry that's literally a scriptural counter to ark encounters nonsense. I'll claim that all day. It's not true.
That's the new narrative.
But yes.
There you go.
Yeah, definitely. I definitely thought about that 2 years ago. I think there's got to be something in there for deconstructors, right?
Right.
And people trying to meaning make out of these staged stories and by querying them, flipping them, yeah, doing theology from the underside,
For sure. I think there is something there. And even when I first came out, I didn't quite get the, I started listening to the Queer Theology podcast and I was well, not every story needs to be queer, but not understanding that the purpose of finding queerness in each story is because queer people have been excluded from the story for so long. And so we take the liberty to read ourselves into the story, even in places where we're not explicitly there. There's some allegory to queerness in each inch of the Bible that we can find. And we read ourselves into the story as almost a form of holy protest against the exclusion of marginalized people. Right. Just like there's how Southern preachers during slavery in America would take Exodus out of the Bible when preaching on plantations because they didn't want the message of liberation they didn't want the slaves to identify with the liberation that exists in the Exodus story. And it's just they had to find themselves in the rest of the Bible and find their story in the rest of the Bible. And it's this holy protest, this holy sacred right of being able to not that you are appropriating the story, but that you are finding the queer truths in the different stories of the Bible and the allegories that exist there. So
yeah, I think that's true. And I think finding this queering of scripture, if what we're doing is just naming the voices that are missing and naming that
scripture is against empire, right?
Right.
And that, like, the stories again and again and again are about, like, this empire of destruction, and it looks different depending on who's speaking and what the context is, but the empires of destruction are out to kill and destroy and silence, and God, right, is up to something different, right?
Yeah.
God and God's people are there for a life that of flourishing, right, and a life of liberation and a life of freedom. And if that's what it means to queer, right, to counter empire, then we should be queering everything. Yes. Right.
Yes, 100%.
And it's not about finding gayness in stuff.
No,
like, there's a lot of gayness in the Bible, but yeah, like, but actually, like, let's talk about, yeah, like countering empire, because the part of it is too that I think what people don't understand, and I, well, some folks don't understand, I think regular folks don't understand, and conservative theologians definitely understand but are happy to be complicit with empire, are, in a lot of cases, are that, like with Christian history, a simplified version is that, like, that there are, like, it, at least in the Roman part of, like, the Roman Empire part of things, like, people are really eaten by lions. Like, you know, Christianity, right, is dangerous, right?
Yeah.
It's so dangerous, we're going to keep feeding people to lions, and it's out of control because people, like, we feed them to lions and then four more pop up, right? Right. And so, like, it's really this wild thing that's spreading like a disease, right?
Yeah.
And
have you been reading my sermon notes for Sunday? This is exactly what I'm talking about this Sunday.
So see, we are simpatico. So like, Christianity is spreading like a disease, and then, like, so how did they stop the disease? They took some public health measures and, like, and instead, like, locked, like, basically said, okay, like, we're going to make Christianity the religion of the empire. And when, right, we do that, we're going to stop feeding you to the lions. Yay. But also, we've institutionalized it, and it's ours now. I'm going to take, yeah, this thing that belongs to you all and make it ours. It's, you know, and there's parallels to that all over culture, right? People take queer culture and black and, you know, music from, yeah, black folks and on and on and on, right? Like, you know, whoever, more marginalized groups, and make it wider and blander and, yeah, call it theirs. But, like, so, you know, it's not like this is a unique thing, but, like, but so, like, the Roman Empire makes, you know, becomes, like, Christianity becomes the state religion. They create Pax Romana, right? Which is, like, there's peace in the empire now, yeah, right? But in doing that, like, it's enforced by soldiers, right? So, like, if you don't get on board with this version of Christianity and you want to do something else, right? Like,
yeah,
bad news bears for you. And so, like, I and we've sort of been married to the empire since, right? We haven't gotten away from, like, it.
And, like, the interesting thing with Pax Romana, it existed before the church became institutionalized and was, like, was sort of the oxymoronical statement of, like, we're conquering you and enslaving you and we're calling it peace. And then the church adopted it because it was the Roman church, and then eventually it became very much the same thing, like yeah. Why is my brain not working at all today? This is gonna be such a weird edit for me to put together. We were talking about queering, yeah. Oh, yes. Okay. So the entire narrative of, like, the Genesis in particular, but a lot of the Bible, is subverting the narratives of the oppressor and creating it to be your own. So, like the Babylonian creation story has the god Marduk killing Tiamat, the chaos demon of the sea, and ripping her in two, and half of her becomes the sky, half of her becomes the land. Whereas the Hebrew creation narrative has the chaotic sea still happening. So like it's implied that Tiamat is in there, but instead God creates the world by speaking. And in the Babylonian myth, humans are created to be slaves to the gods, and with the Babylonian king as being the only person made in the image of God in the Hebrew narrative, we're created to be partners with God, and everyone is made in the image of God, both male and female, and that's a merism, so everyone in between as well. And then the Babylonian myth has the global flood, who the only person who survives is a half man, half God. And then you have the Hebrew version where the flood happens because of the half man, half God, Nephilim people. And the people who survive are a remnant creation of the image of God again. So it's like it's taking these myths and subverting them and finding your own story in it. And so like that's what scripture is subverting right. the imperial narrative of your oppressors and finding your own story in it. And so like when we're able to do that, just to go back to that, when we're able to do that as queer people, as I mean, neither of us are people of color, but like when BIPOC people are able to do that, and when queer people are able to do that, like that's keeping very much in spirit of what scripture is for Jews and Christians. So
I feel like we need to lift that up again, Jeff, that like scripture is subverting the narrative of the oppressor and then yes. finding your place within that
yeah.
new story,
which is what like, the gospel amen. Is too, because like Caesar Caesar issued like gospel proclamations when he would conquer people. And then Jesus coming on, like Jesus using the word gospel is incredible. Like it's intentional. Like he's not just saying like, I have good news. He's using the language of the oppressor to like
right.
be insidious and subversive. Yeah. So,
yeah. Right.
So we can do that too, because the church yeah. has become the oppressor because it got married to empire, like you were saying. And the church has committed mass atrocities recently. I was talking in the interview I did right before I jumped on with you. I was talking about how like the Canadian government, Canadians like to think we're better than Americans in terms of like racism and stuff like that. We're really not. We especially in regards to our Indigenous peoples, because like we contracted our genocide out to the Catholic Church and the Anglican Church. And the South African government consulted with the Canadian government on how to apartheid better because of right, how right. we treated our Indigenous peoples. So right, like,
the boarding schools.
Yeah. And so like us being able to take the narrative of the church and subvert it and find ourselves in that is holy and prophetic work that we absolutely yeah. should be doing.
Yeah. We are hitting Pentecost, which yeah. I think Pentecost is a perfect like anti-empire story, right? Because empire is like circling around these, you know, terrified people. Yeah. Like literally soldiers are doing that. And they're like, we don't fucking know what to do. Like, what are we gonna do? And Jesus isn't here. And like, how are we supposed to fix it? Like, right. we don't know, and we're all gonna die. Like, I mean, they're terrified and mad yeah. and like and stuck. And like what happens is the coming of the Holy Spirit, right? Like they, you know, get some cojones in the form of, you know, tongues of fire, mm-hmm. right? And you know, out and decide to like, well, you know, we're gonna speak truth anyway, yeah. and go out into a town square and manage to be able to speak in the language of everyone, yeah. right? Around and which is wild. It's this like I did our little like the progressive clergy had a like Pentecost duet train today, mm-hmm. and I had a little sermon on there. I did the 1 minute sermon, and I said I think because I had seen a tweet from I believe Lenny Duncan. I want to give the correct appropriate or correct quote to that, but I might be mistaken. I'd have been someone else, but I think it was Lenny, who said like Stonewall is somebody said that Stonewall is
like Stonewall is Pentecost, right? Like where you are acting against, like you're speaking out in literal and other forms against the empire, right? And doing something in you know, an indwelling of the spirit toward liberation and toward gospels of justice. And so like so Black trans women throwing bricks at police, right? Is a Pentecost, it, right?
It's beautiful.
George Floyd Square is a Pentecost, right?
Absolutely.
There's a million of these sort of stories. This is not how I was taught Pentecost, right? Like
right.
Evangelical and, church.
And like the point of Pentecost is that like the barriers that we have set up between us and God and between the people and God are annihilated. Like we right. become the temple. Like
right.
like we no longer have to go and pay homage to human sensibilities of what God looks like because God is inside of us now.
Right.
God is in the common people. Like everyone is the image of God. Like it's not just the priest who gets to interact with God. It's everyone. And so yeah, like absolutely, like when we encounter these moments of crying out to justice, like you were saying, like Marsha P. Johnson. Marsha P. Johnson. I can't remember if it was Johnson or Watson. Throwing the brick at Stonewall. Like, yeah, absolutely. Like that is the spirit creating outrage at injustice inside of her and manifesting in that way. And like yeah, and the George Floyd protests, like that is the spirit manifesting outrage at injustice. We should be outraged at injustice. If you have the spirit of God in you, as so many Christians claim they do, like you should be outraged at injustice. I can't believe the amount of people, the amount of white people who sit in church on Sunday morning and sing, "Break my heart for what breaks yours. Everything I am to your service, Lord." And then just go to like Chick-fil-A after church and not like are not just heartbroken at the injustices in the world. Right. They're like, "You just prayed that. What's going on here?"
Because some police are Christians, so we can't yes. upset them. Also, yes, like course. If we make too much noise about justice, people will stop giving to the churches, don't you know?
It's true. Well, and it's like like the whole
y'all thing, that isn't true, that's a hot mess. No, yeah, don't do that.
No, the just whole thing to be crystal clear. people being outraged at the New York banning cops from Pride Parade, which I'm like, and people are like, "Well, what about the LGBTQ members of the police force?" I'm like, "Oh, what about the LGBTQ members of the Ku Klux Klan? Are they invited?"
Right. Like, I mean, like 2 years ago, because we didn't have Pride last year because of COVID. Yeah. But like 2 years ago, when there was the national push, because it was 50 years of Stonewall, right. There was a national push to get cops out of Pride. Our police here in St. Louis like to drive around in their tanks because they have tanks from Ferguson, right. you know? And yeah. so they like to drive around in tanks and like walk up and, you know, they have armored formations and they have armored, I mean, they just put a million cops there to intimidate people. And it's a hot mess. And so so there was a condition that basically one particular group was going to walk at the front, like they were asked to be the marshals, but only if the police weren't allowed to march in the parade in uniform, but they could march in their like, "We're cops and we're great" shirts or right. whatever, like that's fine. But they weren't allowed to march in the parade in uniform, and that the police couldn't visibly lead the parade. So they weren't yeah. allowed to take the tank out in front of all of these Black trans people who are going to lead the parade, right. right? And now they could clear the street. They're going to cause all kinds of shit before, but they had to be a block out, right? And we weren't even trying to get them to like bring down the numbers of like riot cops that lined the street, you know, like, I mean, right. we weren't asking for a lot. We didn't think so. And so then originally our Pride committee agreed, and then a bunch of white gay men pushed for like, "Oh, well, then what happens? We won't be safe from all the you know," they various slur words for Black queer young queer people. So then but mostly the problem was that they're Black,
and for North City. What happens if they're coming into our area? Blah, blah, we just need to protect our stuff. What if they, and oh my God. Like, it was such like fragile people, but also like whiteness. It was really bad. So Pride Committee, and then, but they threatened with their money and they've got all the money. So the right. Pride Committee pulled back their thing. So then this group tried to pull out. It was a whole thing. We got some national press about it. Basically, we agreed to not be, because they wouldn't pull cops from Pride, we yeah. agreed to not be the head of the, like, we decided not to be the head of the parade. But then there was but not only that, so it was cops, but also there was also a group of a couple of white, well, one black trans woman who just ends up on the wrong side of things sometimes. Mm. She's in the pocket of these white gay men because they fund her right. art projects. But so like this one woman, and then these two like old white powerful cis lesbians decided that what they needed to do was, had we been able to be at the front of it, they were going to run out in front of us and hold up signs that said "vote bitches," because they were very upset that that young people would get to lead the parade and who weren't listening to the voices of their elders who said they need to have cops at the front of the parade.
Right.
So it was just a couple of things where like, oh, like, but also it was people, them really being all being uncomfortable with being trans, including the one trans person who doesn't want anyone to know. Anyway, it's a whole thing.
Right.
Transphobia is real in the trans community too.
Yeah.
But like, so, but it's just this whole mess where like, where I think like it's just all of these examples, like both intra-community and external, where like people continue to choose empire because it's comfortable, because yes. we've been sold some model of safety yeah. and refuse to interrogate what that actually means. You know, because it doesn't affect me with my white skin and blue eyes, you know, like,
right.
You know, I'm an activist. I get to be a loud, obnoxious activist a lot, and I don't get arrested. Now,
right.
The day is coming, right? I'm sure the day is coming, but like, I've been at so many of these things and I always am like, oh, it's gonna be next week. Like, you know, I'm up to shit. Like, it's gonna be next week when we're shutting down this or that. But right. like, you know, I just, but actually, like, I've been at dozens and dozens and dozens of these actions that my black colleagues have gotten arrested at
mm-hmm.
next to me, beat right. down and next to me, and they're like, oh, hello, ma'am. Like, how are you? Are you okay? Because it's my black blue eyes and my white skin. And they assume I'm a St. Louis. I'm not a St. Louis name, but I look like I could be a big St. Louis name, and you don't put me in jail because I might have a good lawyer. Right. So like, so it's just this, because I look like I belong, and don't, but you know, so it's just these things where like, I have some privilege to advocate for liberation.
Yeah.
In a way that actually isn't, it's costly to me. Like, I keep getting fired. You get yelled at all the time. Like, but like, it's not actually probably going to cost me my life. Right. Right. Like, right. I'm not making any bones. Like, I'm not signed up for martyrdom, you know? Like,
right.
I'm probably going to be just fine. And so I just like, yeah, it's so people choose empire even when it's costly, but not actually that costly to do right. something different, right?
Yeah I mean, yeah, it's the fear of doing something different, of figuring out like well we've always done it this way, it's always been this way, and half the time that is the problem,
right.
is that we've always done it this way. So, yeah. what would be your biggest advice? I'm gonna have to jump off soon because 11:30 and there are I have a semi-detached house, so I don't want to be talking too loud too late in the night. But what would you say is your biggest piece of advice for churches trying to be better ministers to trans people, trying to be better accomplices to trans people?
I think don't start your LGBTQ efforts with cisgender white gay men, or you're never going to get it. Right. We recently had an issue where someone in my area gathered the three trans Christians that she knew to talk to us about their church's LGBTQ program. And yeah, she told us that she would like a white gay man to run the service. And we're like, absolutely not. We called her out on it and she lost her shit. So like, I end up leaving the meeting because I'm like, I'm pushing at you and you're just being terrible. I'm done.
Right.
Like you caused harm to trans people. So I hope you feel good about that, because I don't feel good about it. But yeah, like so what I'm saying is, like, white, gay, yeah, like you can't start with people with one level of privilege removed from the main, you know.
Right.
I think, like, if you want to really, like, if you want to care for trans people in your community, actually what you should be involved with is sex worker rights.
Mm.
Right? Like, instead of just putting out a fucking trans flag, like, that's a step, and like, pronouns are nice, right? But like, actually, if you want to care for our community, a ton of my community is employed as sex workers, right? Some in person, a whole lot actually doing OnlyFans, which is like, okay, I know it's TikTok and I don't want to get us in trouble, but like, but the reality is actually, like, that's a really, like, a great way for my folks to work a way to, that, like, they get to choose their employment, choose what they take, make a lot of money, and not be exploited for $8 an hour at McDonald's.
And the risk is minimal. There's so many less people involved to abuse you.
But there's also like tons of my community who, like, for some of them have tons of petty charges because they've been targeted and harassed for their whole lives. For being black and trans, usually, but sometimes just trans and white or something else. But like, but you know, so sometimes it's hard to get a job for reasons like that. But a lot of times it's hard to get a job as a trans person because you're visibly trans. And so like, so sex work for a lot of my folks is both in person and online is sometimes something that people choose out of other options, but sometimes it isn't, but it tends to work well for them.
Right.
And in any event, like, I think that churches should, like, if you want to be safe for trans people, you need to actually be safe around the language that you use around sex workers. Right. And be affirming of folks and not, you know, and so like, you need to check your language on the ways that we talk about sex and sexual relations. And we also, you need to start with your most marginalized population. So your thing should center Black and Brown trans people. Right. If you're a border congregation for Southern U.S. Southern border congregation, should be centering like Latinx, right? Like trans immigrants, but it's not even just immigrants. It's also people in your area, you know, like, it's just, so it's centering those folks and it's never it like in centering advocacy and not just putting up a fucking flag. Cause if you just put up a flag, like, you're going to probably get some trans people, but if you haven't changed anything or really everything about the way that you operate, you're just going to cause us harm.
Right.
So honestly, like, I don't need church. Like, but I don't need a church to pretend to be more trans. I like doing fucking trans 101s. Like, it is 2021. Like, you don't need to pay some probably not trans person to come in and tell you about all the terms. I mean, you can Google and there's some great resources on like all these things. I don't need you to spend your time and your effort doing that, like just doing congregational education. It is 2021. Get with it, y'all. Like, I don't need that. What I need people to do is go out and do the justice work, right? And if you go and do the justice work, that happens to intersect with our community, eventually our community may approach you and say, like, we'd like to be a part. Can we be a part here? And then you can do the work specifically around what people need, but go and do the justice work first.
Yes. That's so
good. That's what I got. That's my advice. That's amazing. Which people aren't going to like, because what people want me to say is put out a flag.
Right.
And do some education work. And would you fucking fix your pronouns? Like, yeah, fix your pronouns. Whether or not you have trans people, just do pronouns. Like, put pronoun stickers on your name tags. Like, that's right. Easy. But that's not trans liberation.
Right.
Right. That's just being decent to the people.
Yeah. That's
like,
it's literally
not punching me in the face if you bother to ask my pronouns.
Right.
Like, or honor them if I tell you 17 times that I use they, them. Like, right. Make an effort to honor them. But that's right. Like, but that's not, you're not affirming. You're just.
Yeah.
Not 100%.
Thank you so much for talking to me. This has been honestly amazing. And I'm excited to listen back and figure out what you were saying while I was trying to get my kid back in bed.
And the person from Chicago I finally remembered was Ted Jennings.
Oh, okay.
Was a scholar out of, I believe, University of Chicago Div School. But anyway, Ted Jennings was the name I couldn't remember. So
nice.
You could edit in earlier. Like, you can put
I'll take the clip of you saying it right in it. Oh yeah, there you go.
I think, Tori, it might be Ted Jennings. And I'll be like, yes, yes, it is Ted Jennings. You are so correct.
I'll splice this audio into there. It'll be seamless.
It'll be fine. I'm sorry to make it hard to edit.
No, it wasn't you. It was just the fact that I had to get up and I kept forgetting things and then remembering them 20 minutes later. So,
well, parenting is an important and holy job. So thank you for trying to raise your kids right.
Thank you very much.
With justice and liberation.
Oh my gosh. It was, I had one of those days where something happened and I'm like looking at it and I'm trying not to react. And my son goes, are you going to say, God damn it? I was like, probably. He's like, why do you say that? I'm like, I say it when I'm frustrated and I probably shouldn't say it so much. He was like, okay.
So, oh, buddy.
Yeah, he's a good kid. But I don't like shout it at them. I just like mutter it under my breath as I'm cleaning up messes and stuff. But yeah. It was just, it was one of those like convicting moments where I'm like, yeah, you hear this stuff that I say. I should watch what I say more. Yeah.
Well, thanks for chatting with me.
Thank you for chatting with me. This is honestly, this has been so wonderful. I'm so excited for June 7th. This isn't going to go out on June 7th, but I'm so excited to like start posting everything on June 7th and then having them.
That's awesome. Yeah. I'm looking forward to, like, cause you're interviewing like a ton of folks that I really like, but some of them I haven't had a chance to have a long extended conversation. So I'm really thrilled that we get to do that.
Yeah. It's going to be fun. Okay, cool. Well,
all right. So nice to see you.
We did it. Congratulations. That's our show for today. Big thanks to Pastor Tori Jameson for having this conversation with me. If you want to find them online, they are at salty_chaplain on TikTok and Instagram. And you can follow Lot's Wife Trans and Queer Chaplaincy on Twitter at Lot's Wife Chap STL. And if you have the means to support their work financially, you can become a Lot's Wife Trans and Queer Chaplaincy patron on Patreon at patreon.com/Lot's Wife. If you want to find me on the web, I'm at CFC_PastorJeff everywhere. If you want to check out the church where I pastor, you can find us at chosenfamilychurch.com. Our services are all online, so if you want to join a Zoom service, hit the Join a Zoom Service link at the top of the page, fill out the form, and we will send you a link to our next service. You can find this podcast, as well as my other projects, online at theautisticmystic.ca. Until next time, remember that you are the divine image of God, the chosen vessel of the Holy Spirit, and the way God interacts with creation, and so are the people you hate. Love ya. I'm so sorry he's calling me again.
Oh, you're so okay. Sorry. I'm so sorry, Jeff. I keep interrupting. All right. Or being a parent is hard, y'all. I'm not a parent, but I have much respect for all of you who parent. Mad respect. So, let me see. She's a rock formation now. I mean, yeah, so there is a rock formation that's named for her, but they think that it's actually, so like, but the text is very clear that it's salt and that salt eventually will disappear, but in a valuable
way that like what she does becomes part of, you know, this like is used, right? And I think that there's something really to that. But I'll say it again when Jeff reappears. I'll finish my thought when Jeff reappears. I was turning around as part of some prophetization. Okay, yeah, so I'll talk about that. Yeah, so basically, like, so there's, like, the, like, so there's, like, the Jonah narratives, right? Where Jonah runs away, and all they want Jonah to do, like, Jonah feels a call from God to go and tell his people a hard truth, right? And Jonah don't want. So Jonah runs away, a fish eats him, and you know, God spits him back out, because basically, if you're not going to do it, I'm gonna make you do it, right? There's like Ezekiel is called to speak to people, talk to his own people about the coming things. Isaiah does that, like, so it's a lot of like the role of a prophet isn't to like go talk to people you don't know, right? A lot of times the role of the prophet is to go and speak truth in the places where it's least likely to be heard, right? Go and speak truth in, you know, in the most difficult of places. And so a lot of times that's the place where you're from and don't want to be, right? And so, yeah, so a lot of prophets are sent back to their home places, if that answers that. In evangelical tradition, we are taught she looked back with longing for the good times, sad. Yeah, yeah, because it was so wild in Sodom and Gomorrah. I was taught that too, Brian. The other thing that I was taught for the reason that she turned back is because she wants to disobey her husband and therefore disobey God. So you women, just watch out. I mean, like, hot mess. Like that kind of evangel. I mean, that's like reading your own cultural whatever into it. And, you know, like, I mean, it's not. Lots got a lot of issues. I just, you know, I'm but blind obedience to one's husband is not what God wants then or now, right? Yeah, that's great to bring truth home, right. And so I think sometimes, like, I think about that a lot, because like some of the prophetic role is that, like, sometimes what we're called to do is to go talk to like our QAnon like relatives, right? Or to like, or accept that, like the thing about a prophet, right, is that they know that God has their back. Like they know, like there's these very specific roles, right? So you're not actually putting yourself in harm. So like it's not like queer people, please stay in unaffirming places, right? Like that's not the answer. What the answer might be though, is that like that prophets in like talking to the QAnon, talking to unaffirming people, like some people can do that, right? But like if it's going to cause you harm, don't do it. But at the same time, like if you've got the power and the privilege to like be able to, you know, tell people like white nationalism is not Christian, right? Like that's a prophetic role. If you can go, because I'm from the South too, like, or I'm from wherever, you know, like I've been there, I understand your issue, but I'm telling you you're still wrong, like, you know, I think that that's a good prophetic role, so long as it doesn't cause you direct harm, right? So don't misunderstand like Jeff or I's like, you know, talking about prophetic role to say like put yourself in harm, because absolutely don't put right. yourself in harm.
No, yeah, stay right. safe.
Queer people, like, in case you didn't, it was missed before when I was talking about, when we were talking about a colleague insulting my video, and then same person like wanting to like queer people today, wanting queer people to read unaffirming literature, like that's bullshit. Like that's gonna cause you harm. Don't.
I remember what I was gonna say at the beginning. Now yes, it please. Was about that. No. Also, I want to say I'm so sorry. I've had to disappear twice. SJ got called to a birth last minute today, and
exciting.
normally they're home while I'm podcasting, so if the kids wake up they can take care of it, and of course the one night they are not here is the night the kids have nightmares, so
you're fine.
The unaffirm, yeah, the queer people needing to read unaffirming takes it, like, as if we've never heard it before, right? Like, we are steeped in non-affirming literature and non-affirming theology. Like, that is all we get. And so it, like, right. we don't need to read more of it because we've heard it already. And like,
right.
I've been doing TikTok almost like 10 months now, almost a year. And in that time, I have not heard a single original argument from non-affirming people as to why homosexuality is a sin. I hear the same regurgitated arguments. And when I present a defense against their position, like why Leviticus 18:22 is not saying homosexuality is a sin, they don't ever address the actual points I've made. They just quote more scripture, which I've also already talked about. And so I'm like, no, like I know tons of unaffirming theology. I know tons of unaffirming theologians. I actually listen to like lots of unaffirming theology just from the standpoint of like, there's good academics happening out there, and I don't necessarily agree with their conclusion, but like their research is good. And so like, so, but like, I'm also like, I've gone to school for this. I know how to weed through the bullshit and stuff like that. Like, someone who right. is a queer person without a theology degree does not need to read unaffirming theology, because that's all they're going to hear
right. from
everyone else. Like,
right. It's super wild. It's like when, like, we talk about like God or the divine, like intentionally not using masculine words, right?
Right.
I don't remember who said it, but it was one of the feminist theologians was like, no, I always call go or womanist theologians always said like God, I always use she pronouns for God, like mm-hmm. all the time. And that might feel excessive to folks, but like God has only been a man for the past right. 2,000 or 3,000 yes. years. So it's fine. We have some ground to cover before we get to equality. Like,
right. Yeah. Or like when people are like, why do you need to make your sexuality like such a big part of your identity? I'm like, your sexuality is a big part of your identity too. You just don't realize it because the world is geared towards cis normative heterosexuals. Like,
right.
like, right. like nobody's watching a romance movie and sees like, Bridget Jones kissing Mark Darcy and being like, oh, why do they have to be so flagrantly heterosexual about yeah, this? Like,
the straights are at it again.
Yeah, yeah, like no, like the world is geared towards heterosexuality. Right. And so it's just when we take the smallest amount of space, is that saying when you've never experienced oppression, equality feels like oppression.
Right.
Yeah.
It's true. Okay, so I'll finish my thought on the thing.
Yes, I'm so sorry. This is going to be such an interesting editing process of me trying to get everything together.
I'm so sorry. I apologize.
No, it's my kid's fault.
I'm like full of tangents too. Like, it's fine.
That's what this podcast is about. I almost renamed it Rabbit Trails.
is the radical interesting rabbit trail. It's totally fine.
Yeah.
So, okay. So we were talking about prophetic tradition.